Grab a Bible while you're doing that. If you don't have one at the end of your row, we have a Bible for you. We'd love for you to take that. Use it this morning. If you don't have a good Bible at home, that's our gift to you. We'd love for you to take that or give it away to a friend or whatever. We buy those actually, hopefully, to give most of them away. So take that. If you're going to use one of our Bibles, we'll be on page 856 this morning. If you're in your Bible, we'll be in the book of Titus. Chapter 2, we've been studying this book, dealing with kind of God's blueprint for a healthy new church. And so we'll read Titus 2, chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. Slaves are to be submissive to their own masters in everything, and they are to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith, so that in everything they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior. One of the things we've been doing or we've done during this series is we've kind of walked through the book of Titus. We've been talking about leadership and God's plan for building a healthy church. And for the last year and a half, actually a little longer than that, we've had a group of guys that are church planters. They have planted other churches, started churches in other areas of St. Louis that have worked with our church to help kind of lead us. They've kind of been an advisory group for me. So when I had big questions or struggles or just needed prayer, I could go to them and they could kind of walk through issues with me. We're transitioning to having our own elders, our own leaders in this church. But these guys have kind of been through the war with me and just I can't tell you what the three men that have helped me out have meant to me on this journey and really to you as a part of our church. And so we decided to have them make a video, each of them on different topics. And this morning we're going to show a video of a guy named Mark Sikma. He's pastor, one of the lead elders at Matthias Lott Church, which meets in St. Charles. And their church, the way they do community, the way they live out what we're going to be talking about this morning, which is living in community with other followers of Jesus, is really fantastic. And so we asked him just to talk to us a little bit about what that means to be in community and the importance of community and that kind of stuff. So check out the screen.
My name is Mark Sikma. I'm one of the pastor elders here at Matthias' Lot Church in St. Charles. And it's been a privilege for me to serve on the advisory elder board for Genesis Church. And just to watch you as a church community grow and behind the leadership of Mike and to see how this vision that God gave him and just to watch it come to fruition has been a blessing just to see that. And so I'm encouraged by the journey that he has you on and blessed to have been a part of it in the role that I have. The definition of biblical community in short is first of all, obviously if we were to just break down the terms, is it has to be biblical. So the community or the gathering of people has to be built upon biblical standards and biblical the biblical way. And so it's a community that's not built upon gossip or judgment or jealousy. In fact, it doesn't even tolerate those. It's a community that's built upon something more. I think community in our American culture, that the bar has been set so low that we can rip one another apart relationally so much that we then as a church have gotten confused about what biblical community is because we're confusing it with the way that American culture is defining it. And so biblical community is a community that, of people that are so interlocked and joined with one thing as their common denominator, and that's love. I believe that it is important for a follower of Christ to live in that community because that's the way we were made. In the beginning, the first thing that is not good is it's not good for man to be alone. So we were created for relationships, but not just for these random, frivolous relationships, for relationships that have meaning and truth. And so for Christians, it becomes that benchmark in the battle that we're in, that we're able to lock arms and say that we have something to do together, And so it's beautiful when a group of people are going after that together, despite all the things and struggles that we have to deal with. So it's beautiful for accountability. It's beautiful for struggles. It's beautiful to be able to really wrestle with the hard things in life and know that when you communicate the things that you're struggling with, that community isn't going to judge you, but that they're going to love you. They're going to hold you accountable. They're not going to hate you for it. And that's what, in my church experience, I grew up with. I grew up seeing church and seeing people wanting to be vulnerable and wanting to be honest, but when they did, then gossip would run the show. And so it taught everyone in the church that you can't be true, you can't be honest, you have to put on this fake facade, and then people will love you, and that's not biblical community. So the blessing of living with Christians who are really desirous of that biblical community is that those things become the benchmarks of beauty and community, and that together you get to accomplish a goal. Because we are in a battle, we are in a war, and it's much better to fight together than alone. I believe that the bar none, the largest barrier in building biblical community in the new church is gossip. I believe that gossip can quickly tear down a community. And so gossip has to be, especially in a young church, but it goes for any church, it has to be nipped in the bud. It can't be tolerated by anyone. So I think first of all, the biggest barrier is just that people begin to talk about each other, and that idea of love and honesty and care, and they're diminished. And so people get on their heels, and then no one's really experiencing the true nature of biblical community, but also just jealousy and judgment. And when the church becomes, when the line between the church and culture gets grayed, then what do you have? You have a community that you have at work. You have a community that you have on a sports team. There's nothing separating a biblical community then from some American culture community. And so it has to be built upon something else, which is why a true biblical community needs older folks in it. It needs younger folks in it. It has to be multi-generational, built upon the wisdom of the old and the innocence of the young, so that together they can grow towards the gospel of Christ.
Everybody needs water coolers. Everybody needs a place to gather and just be themselves and deal with life and wrestle with issues and have a group of people they can meet with. You know, you go to a work site at a construction site, there's always a water cooler. And when it's break time, people coming from all over, you know, it doesn't matter what they're doing. They can come off the roof. They may be, you know, putting up walls. They may be hanging drywall, whatever their job is. They can come to the water cooler and for 5, 10 minutes, they have a chance just to be relational with people. We live busy, crazy, hard lives. We need water coolers in our lives. We need places that we can build community. When we're talking about this, the idea of community this morning, I want to kind of make it clear what I'm really referring to. Community for us and what we're talking about is that we need places that we live our faith and do mission together. It is important for God's people and God's family, for those who are followers of Jesus, to have places where they're hanging out at the water cooler, where they're building relationships, where they're getting to know other people, and that they're literally going to a different level of relationships. And the reason this is important is because God created us for that. We were created for relationships. We were created, first of all, for a relationship with God. God, you're here today. You are on this planet because God made you for a relationship with himself. But the way that relationship grows and develops is through relationships with other people. And so we're made for relationships. We need water coolers. We need a place where we're in community, where we're living faith and living the mission of God with a group of people and kind of forging through. One of the cool things about real, authentic biblical community is that it's safe, meaning that the truth of the matter is we're all really messed up people who are broken and hurting and flawed and sinful, that once you kind of get past that facade of, oh, everything's perfect, life is wonderful, and you get to a deeper level of relationship, you can really let people wrestle with you, deal with you with the struggles of life. And so we're going to be talking about this morning. I want to tell you some of the people who have impacted my life on this level. People that have chosen to live in community with me, and I've ended up living in community with them, and they have really forged who I am, impacted who I am, and just really been significant for me. There was a guy named Bob. Bob was a pastor. He was an older dude. He was probably in his 60s when I knew him. He's much older. He's actually still alive and still hanging out in churches, preaching on Sundays and things like that. And Bob came to my very first church, the very first place I was serving. I was the youth pastor at this church. And Bob showed up as the interim pastor. The pastor left like about a month after I showed up to start working in this church and went to another church. So they called this old grandfather feeling guy to come and just lead that church while they looked for a new pastor. And Bob got there, and very quickly he made a determination. He actually sat me down later and told me this is what he decided. He made a determination that the most important thing he could do at that church was to speak into my life. And what happened is Bob kind of took me under the wing. I was young and stupid and wild. I had all kinds of crazy ideas, but I was flying by the seat of my pants. And to me, ministry was a dream. And what he did is he spoke into my life and taught me that having a dream and being like a leader of people is cool, but ultimately ministering, serving in the church is about people. And what he did is he really taught me what it meant to care and love on people, and that if that wasn't key to what I was doing, that all the dream and all the cool stuff and whatever, you know, if we were going to blow things up on stage and, you know, just go crazy with teenagers, if they didn't know that I really cared about them, and if their parents didn't know, and I didn't invest in people, that all the crazy stuff would get old after a while. It's relationships that counted. And I learned that because he talked about it, but he proved it by being so relational with me. And I have a debt to this guy. And then we went to a second church, a church, if you were here a couple weeks ago, I talked about that was hard, a lot of struggles. But in that church, there was a couple named Bob and Martha. When we moved there, we were going to move into a house, but that house wasn't ready. And so I moved to this town. It was the first time I'd moved away from like home. Heidi and I had always lived around our parents. We lived in this little town, central Missouri. And when we got there, we actually had to live with this couple for about a month and a half. First, it was really awkward. It was uncomfortable. But those people chose to be kind of our surrogate parents in that setting. And it was this relationship with, they're about 10, 15 years older than we are. They had kids that were close to our age and end up having grandkids that were about the same age as ours as we started having our children. But what happened is we got there after we lived with them for a while. It went from that to they just were always the ones that when we were hurting and struggling or we wanted to rejoice, we knew we could go to them and sit down. And they chose to love on us. They chose to invest in us. Their presence in that town was one of the things God used to help us get through one of the darkest, most difficult times in our lives. Third person I want to tell you about is a guy named Michael. Michael showed up. I was serving at a church here in West County. I'd been doing youth ministry there for about 8 or 10 years. And Michael showed up, and he'd moved from Georgia. And he'd come up here from Georgia with his girlfriend, whose father became the worship leader at our church. And so when Michael got there, I got to know him, and we had a lot of common interests. Michael was a baseball guy, sports guy. We could sit around and talk a lot of sports and things like that. But he had a sense that God was calling him to serve and be involved in the church, especially in youth ministry. And so Michael and I, one day we sat down, we talked about the idea of him kind of coming under my leadership and serving in that church. And for almost a year, we met almost every week. We spent time talking about the struggles and the joys and strategies and things that went on. I kind of took Michael and did with him what Bob did with me in my first church. I just kind of loved on him and watched him grow, man. He got excited about what God was doing. During that time, we prayed for his parents. His parents were not followers of Jesus. And he came with one day with the coolest story of how just out of the blue, his dad gave his life to God. And it was one of the highlights of his life. And then his mom kind of followed suit. It was beautiful. But I got a call from Michael this week. Michael is now serving in a church in Kansas with a youth ministry that's running about 80 to 100 kids. He's in a church that runs about 500 or 600 on Sundays. And God is really using him. He still keeps in touch with me. And it's just cool because this is what community was about. It was living in relationship, living in connection, doing faith, living God's mission with people. People invested in me. God has allowed me to have the chance to invest in others. That's biblical community. And this passage we're going to be looking at this morning out of Titus really deals with people living in relationships. What you won't see here, as I read it earlier, as I kind of walk through it again, you are not going to see this command to people that says, all right, you must live in community. You're going to see a list of, well, if you're an older dude or you're a younger lady or you're an older lady or you're younger guy or whoever it is, here's what you're supposed to be like. But you have to understand what's going on in the context of this passage and the entire book of Titus. It's written to people living on this island called Crete. They are new in their faith. They've planted churches, these new churches. They're just kind of getting off the ground. And so what takes place is these people living in this culture are in a setting where they are like the only followers of Jesus in a totally pagan culture. And they set up their churches not around programs or a place. Their churches were built around households. So you would have a person who became a follower of Jesus who would kind of make their house available for the other people around. And they literally were forced to live in a close-knit relational community that kept them, you know, alive and in some cases literally kept them alive. But also it was kind of the only place that they had to go where anybody had anything like their beliefs. And so the Bible doesn't say live in community because they were. This is the model of the New Testament. The New Testament all the way through, it are these people who become followers of Jesus, who've given their lives to Christ, who are being changed, who God is blessing them, but they are struggling with what does this mean in my life? How do I live this out in my world? And I need somebody to do this with. And so they set up these house churches where they literally met in houses and they developed relationships, and the house church would grow as more people became followers of Christ. Eventually, in some towns, there may have been several little house groups. They would meet occasionally, maybe once a week, maybe more than that, maybe less than that, in a public place where several house churches would come and hear the preaching and teaching of Scripture. But most of life was done in the context of these relationships inside this community that was very real and very active. Paul didn't need to tell these people, live in community. They were. What he is saying to them is, as you live in this close-knit set of people, as the gospel changes you, this is what will happen in your lives. And this is what it needs to look like for people to live in this depth of relationship with one another. They had a very natural water cooler. But for us, it takes a lot more effort, doesn't it? Because we live in a very individualistic society where we kind of are, you know, screaming through at the speed of light, and it's just hard to find moments just to pull away. And kind of our whole culture is wired in such a way to pull us away from the water cooler. But it is so important for people who are following Jesus to find water coolers, to find a place where they are literally living in community, developing relationships, growing in their faith with a group, because Christianity, nowhere in the Scriptures is Christianity designed to be an individual event. It is always a team sport, always. And we need those relationships. Now, you may be here and be like, well, I tried a small group once and it was really awkward and weird and goofy and that kind of stuff. And, you know, then I shared something and people made fun of me, or then they were gossiping. Listen, that is so tragic. I want to tell you that those experiences are real and sad. That's not the way it should be. But as a church, our desire is to create water coolers. Places where people, you know, at first it may be uncomfortable, it may be weird. You may be with people who aren't like you. But over a period of time, you develop a depth of relationship that becomes something that is beautiful and wonderful. And at the water cooler, it goes beyond just we know each other to we're doing life and living mission together. That's our desire as a church. And so we're going to talk about that this morning. And as we looked at this passage, as Paul gives instructions to these people on Crete through this man named Titus, who's kind of a missionary going from town to town, helping them build healthy churches. And as we look at this idea of community, I just want to share with you three benefits that are found in Christian community. When people find a water cooler and they live there, they are living faith and doing mission, and they are serving together and getting to know one another, and they go beyond the superficial to the depth of issues. They become vulnerable. they become able to share their brokenness and their struggles. What are some of the things that will happen in those people? And the first thing is this, that in those situations, when people have community, one of the benefits is that you will find a place of connection. You'll find a place where you literally connect. You develop real relationships with people. I apologize for drinking a lot of water, but I've had a 3-week cold. How many of you guys are just, somebody you know is sick right now? Everybody, right? Good grief. It's just been crazy, hadn't it? Anyway, so if it's annoying you, I'm really sorry. It's not normally what I do, but I just can't get past it. Anyway, there we go. All right. As we talk about connection, one of the things I want to share with you is that in culture and even in the church, we tend to form community. We tend to form connection. We tend to create water cooler experiences that revolves around different things. One thing is that some places we will tend to form community around a common age or life situation. It's community just based on like homogeneous groups. And if you're watching TV, the show Friends is an image of this type of community. 4 people, same basic age, life situation, socioethic background, all these issues come together, and they do a lot of really funny stuff. They end up, you know, in this weird friendship that doesn't look like anything in real life because, you know, if you, like, passed each other around sexually, there's just awkwardness there. But they are able to get over it, and that's beautiful for them. And it's funny, and people laugh because these 4 people who are different in ways are really the same in their life setting. And a lot of times we will try to form community in the church around, like, we'll have a young marriage class or a single mom's experience, or we'll do youth, or we'll have something for older women or older men or a men's group. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what happens in those groups is that the strength of that age group comes out, but the weaknesses of that age group also comes out often. We'll talk about that in a minute, because what happens in this passage is Paul is speaking to people who live in community, but man, they are so beyond young ladies or young men. I mean, they are living among each other. And what often happens is people who hang out with only people that are their age, their background, their setting, can turn very internal, and they get very focused on only the things that are their need set. And that can be a real hindrance to real community, really developing deeper relationships, because then it just becomes, well, I think we ought to do this, and it just meets our needs. And so we got groups sitting around squawking and whining and complaining in churches about the style of music, because any set of people are going to have a style of music that fits their life situation, that kind of stuff. I'm sitting at my computer last night listening to a worship CD that I just, it's one of my favorites. My son is making fun of me, you know, because, if all it is people hanging out, well, I tell you what, if I let my son's age group choose all the music up here, you guys would be like hearing screaming and banging and, you know, head banging and all that kind of stuff. And so it would be an awkward thing. Anyway, the second thing is sometimes people form a community around a common need or problem. You remember the show The Love Boat? I mean, these people got on the boat and they experienced community. They loved Doc, they loved Gopher, they loved Captain Steubing, the rest of the crew. But what took place in that is that they all came with this big life need. Either they had a relationship that needed to be fixed, or they didn't have a relationship and they needed one. And they showed up on the boat to deal with this common problem of love and, you know, the struggles with that. A lot of times churches will try to build community groups where they're getting community that are built on life issues and struggles. A support group for alcoholics might be like that. A mom's group who needs to develop, you know, they all have preschoolers, or they all have kids who are teenagers, or they all are losing their mind, whatever it is. The mom's group is hanging out and they're meeting together. A group that has, you know, kind of a common issue of divorce. That's one. There's a lot of divorce care. And I want to tell you, those groups are very good and very much needed. But they also have some big weaknesses when it comes to developing deeper community. Because if everybody has the same problem, nobody's fixing it. We're all just living in it sometimes. Okay? But there's also other issues, and we need to hear other voices speak into some of those struggles. Another way we can form community or churches might do it is around common interest, where a group of people, maybe it's a group that likes golf or they like football or they like needlepoint or they like knitting or whatever it is, and they start hanging out. Cheers is this, you know, the TV show Cheers, everybody came in and nobody had anything in common. They weren't alike at all, and they didn't really even like each other, but they all liked beer. And because of that, Cheers became a place where everybody knows your name. They had this common interest, and that's what bound them. And there are some very effective ways to help people get connected to people, to give them water cooler experiences around things like sports teams and around some of the other things that I mentioned. And so that's one way to develop community. Another way to develop community is around a common task. This is the TV show The Office. The only reason those people survive with each other is because they have to sell paper. That's it. Beyond that, they're totally dysfunctional. But they have this common task that holds them together. And in church life, we can form community around things like a 12-week Bible study, where a group of people come together, they have this common task that they're pursuing, and they start, you know, doing that together, and, you know, it's the study. We're working through the study. Or a ministry team might be a common task sort of community where people are serving, and they might be greeting people, or they might be working with the worship team or whatever it is. And you form community as you do a common task with one another. And that's a way that people can form community. Another way that community can be formed is through, like, a common greed or pride. Sometimes people form groups, and somebody might show up on the group not because of what they want to see God do in their lives or because they want to give themselves away, but what they can get out of it, i.e. survivor. I mean, those people have community, but it is cutthroat, and it is about ultimately getting rid of everybody else. And there is this greed in this show. I mean, there is a community. We like watching it because there's relationships, but they're awkward and weird because ultimately the goal for every person is to take care of themselves. And sadly, that happens in church community a lot, where people who come to groups and they kind of come with struggles and issues in life, and those struggles and issues in life become kind of the dominant issue for the group. It can really hurt community. Sometimes people come to groups like that and meet Jesus, though, and their lives can be transformed by the gospel and by the love of the group, and that can be a good thing. But these are different types of community, but there's one other type, and that is community that is formed around a common mission. And this is what I would say. All the other types of community can be good, but they need to get to this type of community. If all they are a group living in community, if all it's about is a group who has common interests, or we're all the same age group, or we have a common problem, or we have all these other things, or even we have a common task, and that's all we have in community, it's going to leave you kind of wanting, kind of short of what God has designed. It is when a group of people come together and they literally have a common mission. So you're sitting there going, all right, you've listed TV shows. Well, let me tell you the one that I think is the picture of this, Gilligan's Island. All right, here are these people who wouldn't even go to the same restaurant. They would not have liked each other on any level. They are as different can be. But all of a sudden, they're shipwrecked, and they're on an island all by themselves with nothing else but themselves. And they have one mission: to get off that island, to find a way home. And these people who normally would be in broken, disjointed relationships because they are so different, find a way on this island to live in community around that mission. And this is what I believe Christian community needs to get to. It needs to get to the point where we move beyond just being alike or being different or whatever it is, to the point where it is a group of people who are living together, who realize that if I don't have the partnership and relationships of other followers of Jesus, I'm not going to make it. And as we do mission together, as we live together, we are pursuing God's purpose and mission in our lives. And it is that type of community that will get beyond the superficial, that will get beyond the simple, that will get beyond just being alike and talking about football and parties and whatever it is, that will get to the deeper things. Because it is when you serve and live the mission of God with people that God begins to work in your life and take you deeper. And what happens in this passage, he starts by saying, chapter 2, verse 1, he says, as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Let me show you a place where this kind of community took place. Acts chapter 2. He says, all who believed were together and all had all things in common. Now, let me explain what that phrase is. It says, all had all things in common. It sounds like it was a big homogeneous unit. Everybody was alike. They were all the same type of people. It was like this demographic of 20 to 25 young kids, and they were... That's not it at all. We find earlier in Acts chapter 2 that when the story starts, they had to have the gift of tongues to communicate because there were people from every corner of the world in Jerusalem, and it was the gift of tongues speaking in foreign languages. God like supernaturally allowed these followers of Jesus to walk in a street and start preaching, but these guys who spoke Hebrew, somebody was preaching in the Cretan language, somebody was speaking in language from this area of Rome, somebody was speaking, they were all speaking foreign languages to people. They heard the gospel in their own language and gave their lives to Christ. This is the group they're talking about when it says they had all things in common. They're not just from around, you know, the neighborhood around the block. They're from all over, totally different backgrounds, life settings, situations, cultures, but God had brought them together, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as they had need. Day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people, and the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Christian community. It's when people are living together, common mission, doing faith together, and all of a sudden there's a depth that pulls from even our differences and our brokenness and our sinfulness even sometimes, and allows us to go to a deeper place with a group of people. And that is where Christian growth and development really will take place. Jesus modeled this by calling 12 men who were totally different, and they became people living in community. The early church here in Crete, Paul is calling them to this. And he says to Titus, he says, but as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. And the word teach there, if you have the ESV, the Bible we read from, it says teach. It's actually the original language. It is the word that means to talk. And it's not like Paul's not saying, all right, when you stand up and you teach and you got your Bible open and you're shouting and screaming and talking to people and preaching and all that stuff and people are just sitting, that's when you do this. What he's saying is as you just have relational conversations with people, make sure that the things you talk about fit what God has done in your life. Sound doctrine, the idea of this healthy set of beliefs. We've talked about that last week. That's kind of the backdrop that there were false teachers. He says, as you're having conversations with people, as you're relational with people, as you develop depth in relationship, just make sure the things you talk about lead people to trust Jesus and follow him. He says, teach what accords with sound doctrine, because it is in the context of this house, these relationships, the depth of thing that you will develop connection with one another. And what you take into that connection is so key, especially for a guy who's a leader. And so the first thing you get is this connection, this sense of common mission, common relationships, depth. And the second thing the second benefit of living in community is the benefit of growth. The benefit of the fact that people from different backgrounds and life situations bring their relationship with God into this community, this setting, and they grow there. And they grow because of the different relationships that are in there. The situation this week that happened in Kirkwood is horrific. I know every person that's in here, when you first saw it, you just were broken. And there was a depth of pain to deal with, man, just like that. Life is so short and the tragedy, there's just no sense in this. I have a friend that I grew up with who is a guy who I've lived in community with over the years who has just been somebody that I love deeply. And he and I actually emailed him before this happened, but he called me yesterday and we had a conversation. He's an African-American guy who I grew up with in Brentwood. Man, just a godly dude who's a leader in his church. And we hadn't met or hung out for a while, so I was trying to set up time for us to go have dinner. But as we were talking, we were talking about this situation. And what he did is he kind of pushed back on me to say, listen, no excusing the response that took place. But part of what's going on here is that there is a real lack of understanding between two cultures. That there is a real disconnect between the culture that is in this area called Meacham Park and the rest of Kirkwood around it, and it's real. And my friend actually knew the guy who did this, and he said, man, it doesn't make sense, but there's some things going on that nobody really knows, but it flows around this lack of understanding. You know, and you need to hear me. I'm not saying, well, it was okay what he did. It wasn't. It was terrible. It's tragic. But here's the deal. In culture, we fight for ourselves. But what God has designed to take place in the church is that people from different settings and different backgrounds and different age groups, they come together and they find a way to live the gospel together so that when the world responds like that and they just don't get each other, they look into the church and they see people who are in that level of relationship where we understand one another, we are seeking to hear the lives and the hurts and the pains and the struggles of other people. And I say that because it is when we enter that depth of relationships that we will experience Christian growth. We will experience grace. We will experience forgiveness. We will experience what it means to love other people. And so what Paul does here is he lists five groups of people. Now, I've got to address these really fast. I would encourage you, if you haven't done so, you can pick up a copy of our sermon notes where I go in a little more detail. But he addresses five groups of people here who are trying to live in community with each other. And the first group of people are older men. He addresses the older men. Verse 2, he says, older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith and love and in steadfastness. One of the real tragedies of like this idea of age, you know, classes that are broken down by ages is that everybody needs somebody in their life who's like their grandpa figure. Everybody needs that guy that was like Bob to me when I went to my first church. Who, man, they have a wisdom, they have a you know, they've been through the trenches, they've been through the wars, they've loved each other, they've endured, they persevered in following Jesus, and now they can just kind of lovingly speak back into the lives of other people. We all need those people in our lives. But the danger for older men is that they sit around a coffee shop with a cup of coffee, and all they want to do is talk about the good old days and talk about how what things were like back when. And they tend to really, when they cluster, if they're not careful, they will constantly be questioning leadership, just constantly challenging the leadership of the church. And what God designed wants is that these men are relational with everybody else, that it's fine to have the cup of coffee with the older men, but don't sit around and bellyache, but be in relationship with people who are different, because as you invest older men, and some of you guys in here, there's not an age set on any of these. Some of you are the older dudes here in Genesis. You need to realize that what God has called you to do is to speak in lives and be relational with other people, demonstrating your soundness of faith, your soundness of doctrine, your soundness of endurance. The word sound here and all through the book of Titus, it's one of the key words. It's actually used about four times just in the passage we're reading here. And as Paul talks about soundness, it's actually a word that means healthy. We've been talking about building healthy churches. It comes from this word. We get our English word hygiene from the word that is in the original language here. And so we're talking about building healthy, hygienic, solid churches. And these older men, they need to be examples, pictures of what it means to be sound in their teaching, sound in their faith, healthy in what they believe and healthy in their endurance. And then they need to pass that on. And so older men, we need older men to live in community and relationship and invest themselves into the larger church and to honor God. The second group are older women. In verses 3-4, he talks about older women. And I can assure you that there is nobody in our church that fits this bill, okay? Just letting you know right now, nobody here is part of this group, so you're off the hook, all right? Anyway, older women, it says, older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, meaning they are just to be the type of people that their life, you know, this isn't like solemn, like, you know, all you do is walk around humming, you know, in very deep tones, and I'm a good person and reverent. No, it means that your life is a reflection of God who is in you. Reverent in behavior, they are to be... not slanderers or slaves. Let's be honest. Older women have so much to give the church. They have this nurturing, loving experience that needs to be passed on. But where are these people the most dangerous to community? When they sit around and gossip. And Paul says, listen, don't slander. Little secret. The word slander here is a Greek word, diablos. 34 times in the Bible, it is used to talk about the devil by name. Here's what he's saying. People are most like the devil when they sit around and talk about other people. When you are slandering and gossiping and just spreading rumors and, you know, that is when you are most like the devil. And so he says, not slandering. He says that they are to be not slaves to much wine. They need to be careful about intoxication and just kind of being this old lady who just always has a drink in her hand. And he says they need to be, they are to teach what is good and so train the young women. Do you see the connection there where Paul is saying, listen, you need to be investing in the lives of women who are younger than you. These women who are having a baby for the first time and going, I don't know what to do. I'm not even sure how to hold this kid, much less put on a diaper. It's the older women who can lovingly teach them how to nurture because you've been through it. You know, it's you who've held grandbabies and babies, and you can put on a diaper without even looking. You know, you're just there. You know, I mean, that's, and these ladies are like, I which side goes in front? It is older women who are passing this on. That is how you ladies build community in your church. You invest and make sure you have relationships with younger women. He goes on to talk about younger women. He says, younger women, verse four, train young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. And I know some of you already probably have the hair on the back of your neck going, working at home, submissive. Wait a minute, hold on. Let me tell you what this doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that women need to quit their jobs and go work only in the home. I've heard people stand up and say it, and I want to tell you it's bad understanding of this passage, this word, which is used one time in the Bible right here, and the rest of Scripture. I do not think the Bible mandates that a woman has to be a housewife only. I think that is a great option. But it is not the only option. And the reason I know this is that the very same guy who wrote this had two great friends in ministry. One was a lady named Dorcas. One was a lady named Priscilla who had jobs, who Paul points out in other writings what they did for a living and their employment. And in Proverbs 31, where the Bible gives us this picture of this godly, awesome woman, part of her character is that she is a woman who has some business ventures that are part of the family plan. But here is what I think Paul is teaching. I think the good thing that young women bring is this gentle, passionate desire to make a difference in the lives of kids. I think that is huge. But the danger sometimes when younger women tend to want to live in isolation, they see life as just too hectic and too busy to break away from that. And They really want to guard their time so closely that they never get to the water cooler. And man, balance in life is so tough. And so what Paul is teaching, this whole thing is about life balance. And he's saying, listen, older women need to teach younger women how to have life balance so that they know how to love their husbands, they know how to love their children, they know how to be homeward oriented, which I think is what this text and others are getting at. Not that a woman can't work outside the home, but a wife's and a woman's orientation needs to be homeward. Needs to be focused on kids and family and that kind of stuff. And that if they are pulled away from that, there's some dangers there. And so younger women living in community, they need support, they need love, but they have so much, especially when it comes to teaching kids and training other people and just loving on them and that nurturing part. And then younger men, he just has one kind of idea for them. He says, teach them to be self-controlled. That's it. That's it. And I find that really funny. Teach the younger men to be self-controlled. Why? Because they're not. I mean, turn a group of guys loose and you know, they are going to do one of two things. They are going to pull the group down, or they're going to put it on their backs and carry it to the top. Right? Every revival in history, you study this, every great movement of God in the history of mankind started with younger dudes who became self-controlled and pursuers of God. But pretty much every great war was started by a bunch of young dudes who were ready to take over the world for no reason at all except their own greed. And so what happens, Paul says, listen, teach these guys to be self-controlled. And then he talks to Titus. It's interesting because he talks to Titus and he says, all right, here it is. He says, urge younger men to be self-controlled, and you show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works. In your teaching, show integrity and dignity and sound speech that you cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. What he's saying, Titus, you're a younger man. You need to be a model for other younger men to follow. This is what I've found. I've hung out with teenagers and younger dudes who, man, they were just holy terrors. They were not self-controlled. They were running to the bar and running to women and running to pornography and running to everything they could, and they couldn't control anything in their lives. I've been around other dudes who were the strongest theologians, the deepest thinkers, and the one who were ready to march into hell with a water pistol and take over. And what Paul's saying is every younger dude needs a guy like Titus in his life. Every younger guy needs to kind of say, all right, dude, you are pulling me down. I'm not hanging out with you. I need to find a guy like Titus who has sound theology, who has a real passion for God, who is an example, a model of what it means to serve him and follow him and love on him and to be different. And younger men need to gravitate to that, but at the same time, these guys who are living this need to be the ones who reach and grab these guys by the back and pull them into godliness. And that's what's going on. He's saying, younger dudes, man, self-control, teach them that, but here's the best way a younger guy's going to get it. He's going to get it by hanging out with a guy like you, Titus, who is a younger guy, but that in his youth, you are challenging them in the right things. Here's the thing. If you're here this morning, you're a younger guy, and you could be a younger married guy. You could be a younger single guy. You could be a teenager. You need to make sure you have somebody in your life who is a model to follow, because that is how you learn and are challenged. And when Titus and other guys like this are living out their faith, it will become the younger men who do the heavy lifting for the church, who will challenge it and carry it to heights that it can't even imagine. I want you to hear me, younger guys, that's you. You can either become a drain on this church, or you can become the champions that lead this church to greatness as you live in community. Last group are slaves. I need to just address this quickly. I don't have nearly enough time to deal with the big issue here. But I just want to do it quick, because when we read slaves in the Bible, it all of a sudden, it's very uncomfortable because Paul tells slaves to live in submission, to live for the best of their masters, to put on God and all those sort of things. And so then all of a sudden, the cultural question, does the Bible condemn slavery? I've answered this in my sermon notes in a deeper way, but here's a quick response to that. It is this, that in this culture, most of the slaves, we tend to see slavery as it's talked about in the Bible through the lens of our culture that had the just horrendous African-American slave trade. Brutal. And I'd be lying to say that there wasn't some of that in the East or the Greco-Roman world. There was some stuff that shouldn't have been going on. And I don't think the Bible ever condones that. But what the Bible does do is it speaks to people who are already living in a cultural context. And the bigger issue of the Bible is people coming to Christ and having what really enslaves them, their sin. dealt with. And so when it speaks to slaves, it speaks to people living in a context, and it's telling them, as you live in that context, here is how you let the gospel shine through your life. But most slaves, especially I think in the Bible, most of the ones that are spoken to are what are called household slaves that primarily sold themselves into slavery. They had gotten in deep debt, and there's no way in that culture for people from lower classes to ever get out of it. And they were living with the prospects of losing everything, and so they could lose their family, their home, lose everything, or they could choose to sell themselves into the household of another person. They would be owned by that person, but they could, if they ever got to the point where they had enough money, they could buy themselves out of slavery. But now their resources and stuff went to the good of the whole household. And it was in the context of that that they would eventually start paying back their own debts, that their family would be safe and cared for, because they chose to join in a larger community. And this is the context of what Paul's talking to here. He's not saying, all right, listen, if you're a slave and an African-American ruthless person, buck it up and deal with it. And people who have used it to say that don't understand the text, Paul, the Bible, New Testament, none of that. He's talking to people who are living, in our culture, it's an employer-employee relationship. And so if you have a job with a boss, this text speaks to you in your relationship to that person. What he tells him is, listen, as you live as a person under authority in a work setting, be an example of the gospel and live for the good of the person you're working for, because they will see in the fact that you're not argumentative, you're not just always mad and angry and arguing, and you're not always, you're working for the good of the person who you work for and all those sort of things. They will see in that conduct that Christ is the center of your life and the key. And so, but here's the deal. In this context, the reason it's important in this passage is because it's very possible that people who were slaves in the household that hosted the church were slaves in that household, but they may have been a slave under a person who lived in that community who the dad, the husband, the patriarch wasn't a Christian yet. And the question is, how is this person who is in this household, who's letting everybody come in their house and be Christian, but he's not, how's that person going to become a Christian? And one of the ways is that the people who are under his authority live the gospel, and that will speak into that guy's life. And that's kind of what he's saying here. And so there's growth, all these different peoples. As I find community and live it, there's growth. The last thing, I'm real fast, is that you get community, you get growth, and you get a place to live God's mission. There are several points here, and I can't touch them. You can read about it in notes where Paul addresses the issue that these people living in community, there is a greater purpose, and it is that people living in the culture around you will see that faith, and it will change others' lives. When a group of people live together, but they're living to serve and to be the gospel, to be followers of Jesus in a culture and a community, and they live the Christ life together, the world around them sees it. We become like Gilligan and Gilligan's Island, that group on the island. They're living for a mission. It brought them together. But that living together with each other then helps us to greater heights. And God uses us for things that are way bigger than just that group of people. And so living mission together. And so what do I get from a group of people? I get a place of connection. I get relationships that take me to a deeper place. I have growth as I interact with people who may not be like me. But I experience God and goodness through those people. And I experience living the mission together is we get beyond just being internal. We start looking outside ourselves. And so here's the deal. We as a church, our main water cooler is what we call community groups. It's not the only place you can get community, but it's a good place. And I would encourage you, if you're not in community somewhere, to find a water cooler. It can be through one of our community groups. We can talk to you about that. It may be someplace else. You may start a group that is around a struggle or a life situation. But find a place where you are at the water cooler in community. And then pray that that community will go beyond just superficial to depth and to mission. One of the things we do as a church is we do communion. It's funny how communion and community kind of come from the same idea. Because when we celebrate the blood and the body of Jesus and we think about what he's done for us, we consider the gospel, it is a reminder that we as a people who are here are doing life together. And so we come this morning, the bands will come out here, they're going to play, we're going to sing, we're going to worship, we're going to celebrate goodness, we're going to celebrate Jesus, we're going to take communion. It is a reminder that God has done so much for us and that we are now living in community with one another, and we celebrate that together. So I'm going to pray. They're going to come on out. After that, we're going to ask you to stand as we do communion, just as God leads you. If you're a follower of Jesus here this morning, you have a relationship with Christ, we want to encourage you to participate in communion. You just come down the center aisle and participate. If you're not a follower of Jesus, you can use this just time to reflect and pray. Our offering is up here. If you're part of our church, we want to encourage you to give as a response to what God has done. If you're not with our church, if you're a guest, this service is a gift to you. We don't ask or expect you to give. But as we celebrate and we worship, you just do what God leads you to do. Celebrate communion. Focus on Jesus. Lord, we love you, praise you. Thank you for community. Thank you that we have places where we meet at the water cooler and we can develop relationships. And I just pray this morning as we consider that, you will help us to love you deeper and become more like you. And help us to find a water cooler, a place to do life with a group of people. In your name I pray, amen.